This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
Boston Globe arts reporter and frequent Radio Boston contributor Jeff Edgers is here. Hey there, Jeff.
Hi there.
So you're here because you had an amazing story in yesterday's paper, the true inside story of the demise of Opera Boston, right?
Yep, that's true. It is its own opera. You know, it should it be turned into its own opera.
Well, we're going to find out why, but just to remind listeners, let's go back. Opera Boston was one of Boston's two professional opera companies, and it was really known for trying to do some different work.
Well, Boston Lyric Opera is the larger, more established, and, you know, in many ways, more mainstream company. Opera Boston does newer operas, rarer operas, John Adams's Nixon. They did Madame Whitesnake, which earned the Pulitzer Prize for Music for its composer. And not as many people going, but they had a certain audience.
They had a certain audience, and sort of from the outside world, they were generating a lot of buzz, if only because Boston was a two-opera company town, which is pretty rare.
Yeah, I mean, for us, covering it, we got the sense that Opera Boston, which started up in 2003, was growing, was expanding, and was a great sign that, you know, Boston is an opera town.
Okay, but then all of a sudden, the scene shifts, I guess. And last December, with no warning at all, the company, Opera Boston, was just shut down out of the blue.
I mean, I just profiled their new general director. We wrote a lot about Opera Boston over the years. It was bizarre to me that it was closing in that way.
Okay, so it totally out of the blue. Now, on that day in December, we talked to former Opera Boston artistic director Gil Rose. And when he talked to us, he said the company was basically in so much debt that they couldn't make their finances work. And so that was the reason why Opera Boston is no more. And Jeff, the thing I love about your story from this weekend is it turns out that the truth is just so much more, well, as you put it, operatic. So what really happened?
Well, this is a company, it never had any money, and it always had theoretical debts. The difference is that a few very wealthy donors would come in and bail it out and come up with some money. The difference this year is that, in particular, one of their big donors, this fellow named Randolph Fuller, decided to really cut back his giving, and that's what really hurt them. I mean, they had a deficit, and it was growing, but he could have solved the problem with one check.
But he chose not to for a bunch of reasons, and I want to talk about that in a second, but let's talk a little bit more about the details of the kind of debt that Opera Boston was in. I mean, you report that at one point in time, they had a debt load of more than $1 million, and that was in comparison to the overall budget of Opera Boston, which was just barely $2.5 million.
Well, here's the thing about that debt, deficit, whatever you want to call it. It kept growing in the days after Opera Boston closed. When it first closed on that day, 2 days before Christmas, it was $250,000. A couple days later, the Globe writes an editorial, talks to Opera Boston folks, and they say it's now $500,000.
Just in a couple days.
Right. Then that $1 million is what they now are saying they would have gone into if they had kept the season going. So I'm not exactly sure what the real number is, but it was a lot of money.
It was growing, essentially, and they couldn't keep up with it.
Right. At a certain point, they felt like it was out of control and they weren't going to be able to solve the problem.
And Jeff, you actually got an interview with Leslie Koenig. She was the general director of Opera Boston, a very high-profile person that Boston brought over from San Francisco. And she told you that there was a point in which Opera Boston only had $54 in the bank on a Friday and owed $110,000 the following Tuesday?
You know, beyond that, there was a national conference, a national opera conference in Boston, and she said they didn't have the $6,500 to register, so she ended up paying out of pocket. They call it a cash flow problem. I call it having no cash.
That's the background of the finances and the trouble that Opera Boston found itself in. Now, let's talk a little bit more about the central players here in the story. You mentioned a guy who was on the board named Randolph Fuller. Who is he?
He supposedly came into money through his family. He's never voted, according to Boston City records. But, you know, this is a guy who's been involved in Boston's opera scene for decades. This is a guy who people say, you know, we would not have been able to build several of these companies to put on these productions without his money.
Well, I mean, we're talking significant amounts of money, too, because what you were able to find out about Randolph Fuller is that, what, he lives in a $1 million brownstone in the South End. And, for example, in 2010, he gave $420,000 to Opera Boston? I mean, it's not a small chunk of change.
It sounds like somebody who could give money at will, really. Who he is, though? I don't know who he is. People who don't like him say that he's also this petulant, controlling board member who tries to run the organization from the board.
Well, and apparently from your reporting and the people you've spoken with, he was something of an opera aficionado. He had a good working relationship in the past with opera figures here in town.
He had a great working relationship. The previous general director, Carol Charnow, who's now the president of the Children's Museum, and Gil Rose, they said they would go out to lunch with him periodically. They'd throw around ideas. He had many of the ideas that ended up on stage. He was more than an opera buff. You know, this is a guy who was expecting to give creative input to the company.
Mm. Well, as you said, though, he was very central, maybe not just in the artistic aspects of Opera Boston, but also its finances. I mean, so central that it seemed like Opera Boston relied not exclusively, but overwhelmingly on him and a couple other major donors to help put the company on stage every year.
Yeah, I mean, when they were founded, they actually specifically wrote in their strategic plan that they should not get more than 10% of their budget from Randolph Fuller. I mean, that's how, you know, sort of cognizant they were of the fact that they were depending on him. And, of course, they couldn't abide by that. You know, that year you mentioned, $420,000 in 2010, that was almost 15% of their budget single-handedly. You know, a lot more than they're getting from, you know, ticket sales in some ways.
In your reporting, it didn't feel like the Opera Boston board did enough to expand its donor base. I mean, you said you found that Opera Boston had, what, five major donors that gave more than $50,000 a year versus the Boston Lyric Opera that has more than 25 donors who give that much a year.
Well, the folks in charge at Opera Boston say it was not an issue of, you know, not trying. Carol Charnow said she worked tirelessly to try to expand that board. And, you know, the question is, how many people in Boston are capable of giving a lot of money and how many are already, you know, taken for? It's hard to say why it happened, but the reality is this was an organization that depended on three or four people for most of their money. And you're really running a risk that one of these people is going to be unhappy and walk. And that's what happened.
Why? Why did Randolph Fuller walk?
Randolph Fuller loved Carol Charnow, and I think Carol Charnow's a really great person and a great leader. People gave her a lot of credit for what she did in Opera Boston, but I'll tell you, she knew nothing about opera when she took over that position. Randolph Fuller actually took her to her first opera at the Met. Here comes Leslie Koenig. She's directed productions, you know, at the Met. She's been raved about in the New York Times. She's been the general manager of the San Francisco Ballet, which is no small thing, for several years. She has a business degree from Stanford. There's no question that on paper she's in a different ballpark than Carol Charnow to run an opera company.
People you talk to suggest that Fuller may have been intimidated by her expertise.
That's the question. It's like you try to get into somebody's head, and all these board members who are wondering, why is our savior now abandoning us? Could you have done a better job at, you know, as they say, feeding and watering him? Perhaps. Did he want to have more control? And was she like, why am I going to give a board member control over what our productions are? Perhaps. The root of this may have occurred early in the year at this opera, Maria Padilla. And that was when Leslie Koenig decided to edit these notes that Randolph Fuller handed in to go into the program.
And
he did that all the time.
Frequently, yeah.
Apparently, these notes came in late. There was near the printing deadline. There was some stuff she thought didn't work. She edited it a little, and she didn't check with him on her edits. That so enraged him, according to observers, that he tore into her at the opening night, and their relationship was frayed from there and just got worse.
Amazing. So here we have a clash of personalities, it seems, a difference of opinion over the artistic direction of Opera Boston. And then because of that clash and those differences, Opera Boston's major benefactor pulls out. So that's the recipe for the disaster that befell the company.
When that money was gone, they had to find it somewhere else, and they couldn't.
So I'm trying to think of any actual operas, Jeff, that have a real resurrection in them as part of the drama. But do you think in this case, Opera Boston could come back?
Well, I think there's a possibility. Randolph Fuller talked to the Boston Phoenix, and he said, you know, hey, and I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, don't feel bad, folks. You know, something great might come out of this. You know, I'm not done in this town.
Jeff Edgers is the arts reporter for the Boston Globe. There is a link to Jeff's reporting about Opera Boston at our website, radioboston.org. Jeff, thanks so much.
Thank you.